Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. Time to Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk show host, Randy Fine. As you know, good people are ideal targets for abusive, manipulative people. They will prey on the sensibilities of nice people to gain control, while a nice person excuses the bad behavior and thinks the manipulator can change. Guess what? They won't. For emotional predators, life is a strategy game to dominate and control. And you are either a player to be defeated or a game piece to be used. Before you know what's happening, they'll ruin your life without empathy or remorse. And traditional approaches will make things worse. Today's special guest, Stephen Wallhander, handler, JDMA LPC specializes in helping clients deal with seriously difficult people. He has been learning about abusers and manipulators, emotional predators, professionally since 1984, first as an attorney, then as a psychotherapist, mediator, arbitrator, and family court custody evaluator and neutral between parents. And in the last decade, as a consultant and author. So, Stephen, obviously, from what I said, you can tell he has great experience with this. His book, Protecting Yourself from Emotional Predators, Neutralize the Users, Abusers, and Manipulators Hidden Among Us, is absolutely wonderful. Stephen and I are on the same page. And I'm so excited to bring him on and introduce you. So let's get started. Good morning, Stephen, and welcome.
Good morning, Randy. Thank you for having me.
It is my absolute pleasure, and I'm excited to have you because you are, as I said, you know, the conclusions that you've drawn are very similar to the conclusions that I've drawn, and we need to change what's going on in society. So you talk about this being an epidemic. I refer to it as the same. So let's start by talking about, and I don't know if we even really need to say this, but let's talk about what an emotional predator is.
Yes, that's a good question because there's I talk about it in my book. I explain that there are many labels names that have been given to these dangerous people, and I list some of them. I'll quickly just list them. They've been called personality disordered, and among the personality disorder, there's several different, I call them flavors. Certainly the narcissist, the sociopaths, the borderline personality disorders, paranoid personality disorders. They've been called narcissistic sociopath. They've been called sociopathic narcissists. They've been called malignant personalities, malignant narcissists, toxic personalities. Toxic personalities, they are toxic to the people that encounter them. They've been also called covert aggressive manipulators, and you know, you could just also call them jerks, hustlers, con artists, users, abusers, and manipulators. But I call them emotional predators, because the fundamental thing that is in common among all of these people, and they have different styles and they say different flavors, is that they exploit other people by tuning into and preying on the emotions of their targets. And by the way, I like to speak of targets rather than victims, because I don't encourage people to think of themselves as a victim, because my work and my book is about empowering people. And to take a stance, to think of yourself as the victim, we can be victimized by these people, but I prefer to talk about it in terms of being targeted by these manipulative people. But so an emotional predator is someone who, if you will, preys on the emotions of other people. And emotional leverage is it's everything in manipulating other people. That's the tool that they use. So that's why I call them that. The other thing about them, what I call emotional predators, again, they're all emotional predators are, all of them are heavily narcissistic. By that I mean they're selfish. It's all about them all the time. They're all sociopathic in that they're more manipulative, and some are more manipulative than others. In different ways, more sort of, I'd say, intentionally manipulative. And they all tend to be paranoid. And I think they all tend to be paranoid because these people are busy manipulating other people to get what they want, when they want it, and how they want it, without regard to the impact on the other person. And because they're busy manipulating other people, being untruthful, et cetera, they assume that everyone else is doing the same as they're doing, which makes them slightly paranoid.
And so I know that narcissistic abuse is my specialty, and so I'm very familiar with the cluster B disorders. But you add paranoia disorder to it, and that's in a different cluster. So that's really interesting to me when I read that in the book. So it's not strictly cluster B people who are emotional predators, right?
No, that's okay. Correct.
Okay.
After decades of working with these kinds of people and good people in these situations with these we'll call them toxic people, what I looked at was what are the common features, and the common features are of what we can call of abusive, manipulative, toxic, dangerous people. The common features are these predators. They take from other people. They seek to relentlessly. They seek to have the experience of dominating, winning, controlling, and the common feature in all of that is that they lack empathy. I have a very specific way that I understand empathy. A lot of people, you know, a lot of different definitions of what is empathy. But without empathy, they don't have any conscience. They don't have any guilt or remorse, and there's no conscience to restrain them. And again, so you know, I find that the psychological diagnoses, cluster A, cluster B, they're not so useful to me, to the work that I'm trying to do, protecting good people from being abused.
Okay, that's great. So you say in your book, you say that this is an epidemic, and I completely agree that this is an epidemic. It is a silent epidemic, an invisible epidemic that is, it's amazing how unaware everyone is that this is so prevalent in our society. And, you know, I say that pretty much one in five people that I talk to either have experienced an emotional predator or know someone who has. What is your feeling on this? What, how prevalent do you think this is?
Oh, boy. Well, this is a hard thing to get hard data on, but my sense of this is that I don't think it's an exaggeration to say 10, perhaps even 20% of the population. And you can quibble with whether some people are more severe examples of this. I think it's Martha Stout, a professor at Harvard, a psychology professor at Harvard, wrote a wonderful book called The Sociopath Next Door. And in that book, she estimated that one in four people were sociopath. But again, a sociopath is one flavor. It's one type of an emotional predator. You can have emotional predators who are not very sociopathic. They'll have some of those traits, but they're primarily, say, narcissistic. They're primarily all about selfishness, not so much about conscious, intentional, vicious manipulations. And so the answer to your question is I would say easily 10%. I wouldn't be surprised at 20% of the population. And it's a – and by the way, the culture that that I've seen since – well, I don't know how far back. It goes a long way back. But the cultural – I don't know what you'd call it – the zeitgeist of individualism and it's a little bit attributable maybe to the capitalist culture of the and from the era of Ronald Reagan, when this economic theory what was their theory? The trickle down theory of economics, where if you just greed was promoted and became a laudable thing. If I'm greedy and get whatever I want for myself, then it will have benefits for all the other people that I'm stepping on. I'm on my way to accumulating my own wealth. And the that kind of cultural norm has become a cultural norm. I think has contributed to a culture where it's accepted and it's applauded for people to be selfishly greedy and step on other people and have little or no regard for the impact they're having on other people, which – again, this is a severe cultural problem, lack of empathy, lack of what people seem to be have a difficult time putting themselves in other people's shoes and saying, my God, how would I feel if someone did that to me or treated me that way? Anyway, so.
I get it.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying. I agree with every single thing you say. So let's talk about how people get caught up in this. And so there's a lot of quotes. I wrote down a lot of quotes from your book that I really like. I like the way you put things. But you say the first and fatal mistake decent people make is to assume all people are more or less like they are, that all people have more or less similar emotional responses and empathy. Looking for the best in others is wonderful as long as it doesn't blind you to the worst in others. I really, really like that. So let's talk about how people get caught up in this, because they only want good people, because bad people aren't going to give them what they want, right?
Well, one of the things that I talk about and I've observed is that manipulative people, abusive people will target good-hearted people who have an abundance of empathy and compassion and an abundant conscience, good conscience, and they'll prey on a good person's guilt or prey on. And so one of the things, it's a little bit of an aside here, is that people who have been targeted and abused by these predators, they often beat themselves up about it. Oh, my God, I should have known better. Why did I get involved with him?
Yep.
These kinds of things. And what I point out to people is that if you've been targeted by one of these people, it is almost assuredly a sign that you are a very good person, a kind, generous, thoughtful of others, person of conscience and empathy, a sensitive person. It's to be targeted by one of these people, sort of paradoxically or maybe ironically, is almost always a sign that you're an exceptionally good person, a decent person, because those are the people that can be manipulated easily, because those are the people who, in our culture, without knowing it, are making assumptions about other people. The main assumption is that other people must be sort of more or less like I am. And that is that's a fundamental problem. And if I want to go manipulate somebody, I'm going to look for somebody that I can run guilt trips on, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm looking for somebody that has a well-developed conscience. So,
that's right. Of course. Of course.
So, but it's an interesting question is, how do people, I don't know how to get into this, but I guess I would start with, you know, some sort of general guidelines for how to protect yourself and not get involved with these people. I'll say one thing. There's a lot of things to say, but I would say the most important thing is to be realistic about human nature and to drop naive beliefs that you have, that most of us had, that I certainly had for many years, that because you are decent and good, well, then everybody else must be. I mean, I say to people, look, the people respond to this by saying, oh, my God, that's so pessimistic. That's so negative. And I say being skeptical about other people is not paranoid. Being skeptical about new people you meet is prudent. And to be realistic, I believe, is a way of being optimistic, that's not being pessimistic, to be realistic. Because even if you agree with me that there's, let's say, up to 20% of the population are these predatory, toxic abusers, that still leaves 80% of the population that are not. But the damage that a small percentage can do is huge. So I advise people to, first and foremost, stop treating emotional predators as though they are basically like the rest of us, that they're like decent people, as though they have empathy and compassion. By the way, just to go back visit, I define empathy as an immediate, congruent, emotional reaction to someone else's emotional state. And this can get confusing to people because, so for example, if I walk into a room where someone has just gotten some terrible news and they're very upset, and I walk in feeling great. If my empathy is functioning, nothing has to be said. I will immediately pick up on the sadness or the devastation that's in the room, and my emotional state is going to adjust to be congruent with the state of the other person. And it's very important to distinguish empathy from, sensitivity to emotions. Narcissists and all kinds of manipulative people, they can be extremely sensitive to other people's emotions, but they use that sensitivity to gather information about the other person's emotional state that they then use to manipulate the other person. That has nothing to do with empathy, and people confuse that a lot. They go, oh, my God, he's so empathetic. He knew all about how I was feeling, and what did he do with that? You know,
wow.
they don't have, emotional predator will walk into a room where somebody's just gotten devastating news and the person is upset and devastated. And believe it or not, a true predator is going to have an inner emotional experience, something along the lines of excitement and glee, because they're going to pick up on, wow, this person's emotionally vulnerable, and they're going to process this as, oh, how can I gain advantage from that? Maybe I'll play the sympathetic listener, or you know, anyway. So, but again, to return to your question, I think it's most important for people to drop a naive belief that because you're a decent person, everyone else has to be that way too. And the second part of that is you have to learn to recognize the traits and behaviors of dangerous people. You know, they're using others to get what they want for themselves. They're, you know, and so one of the things I say about that is I ask people to consider turning the golden rule inward. And by that I mean the golden rule, in different versions of it, but it says treat other people the way you would like to be treated. And I say to people, well, first and foremost, treat yourself the way you would like to be treated. Because what we tend to do is good people tend to, well, abandon themselves and give themselves over to someone who's busy trying to take advantage of them.
Yes, yeah. Everything that you say is so true. And one of the things that I hear my clients say to me is, you know, they try to understand where this person is coming from. And they try to use logic for an illogical situation, because you'll never understand from your point of view, from a healthy-minded point of view, what an emotional predator or why they do what they do. But we try. And I like where you say let's see. You say, think of them as and minds. It would be irrelevant and an unhelpful distraction to ask whether a landmine knows what it's doing or is just unaware. It's the same thing, right?
Yes. Yes. Yes, that's there's a lot of among the other tremendous mistakes people make is they, and this is a mistake that I think the majority of mental health professionals fall into, is trying to understand a predator in the way that you would try to understand what I would call a neurotic person. But they're completely different. And the energy that a good person spends, well, if I can only understand her better, if I can only be there for her better, those kinds of things, that just makes it worse. And it's enough to understand this is how this person operates. But when I say understand them, I'm distinguishing between understanding, if you will, why they are like that. And this is the traditional mental health paradigm of, if we can, this roots, you know, back in Freudian, the beginning of Freudian work of, well, if we could understand what they went through and their internal, their history and this stuff, then we can help them to have insight into themselves. All of these kinds of approaches make things worse with a toxic person, with a predator. It's enough to understand how they operate. Like a landmine, you don't need to understand the chemistry of the explosives. You don't need to understand the metallurgy of the case that's holding all this, or of the pin or the trigger. You don't need to understand all that. You just need to understand, if you step here, the thing's going to explode under your foot, and that's all you need to know. And it's a waste of time and energy to try to understand why these dangerous people are like that. And that's a trap that people fall into, because one of the things that I think is crucial is decent people, they follow, what would I say? They follow the instruction of our culture and of the mental health profession, you know, and they follow, put it another way, they live by assumptions and core beliefs that most of us don't we're not really fully aware of that we're living by these assumptions. And one of the ones that gets people into trouble is to be a good person in a relationship, I have to, and what? I have to be open and honest with the other person. I have to, you know, strive relentlessly to understand them better. Those kinds of things like that get you into big trouble if you're dealing with a dangerous person. I mean, they're wonderful things to live by if you've already vetted and screened and know that the person you're dealing with is a decent person like you are. But if you haven't already done your homework, and again, the first step of protecting yourself is know how to identify these people. And once you've identified these people, then how you protect yourself calls for a completely different operating principles in relationship. And all the common assumptions make things worse. They make things worse. The common things that we would normally think are supposed to improve relationships. And by the way, a lot of couples counselors will do this with couples where, you know, one person is a raging narcissist, and they'll, we talked before we were on air about this, about the counselor will start, you know, let's try to understand the narcissist better. Let's provide the narcissist with more empathy. And, you know, it's like, no, that
it's absurd. It is absurd. Yeah. And you explain why traditional therapy does not work, and you talk about neurosis and how traditional therapy is based on that. So can you explain that? I really like how you explained it, so that people can understand why traditional therapists are not equipped for this, to handle this.
Okay, let me try to do this quickly. The operative paradigm of the mental health profession, now I'm generalizing, but for the most part, I mean, there are exceptions. I mean, I guess I consider myself an exception, but there are exceptions. But most mental health professionals are operating under a paradigm that I think is at least 60 years out of date. It's a paradigm that's wonderful for dealing with what I call neurotic people. And by a neurotic person, I would say for this purpose, this is a neurotic person is someone who can become a better person by gaining insight and understanding into themselves. Now, emotional predators, they're incapable, that's by definition, they're incapable of having insight into themselves. That's not how they are. So, neurotic people and the operative paradigm for mental health, and by the way, it's the paradigm that the lay people in our culture have adopted from the mental health professions, is insight into yourself and insight into a person and what motivates them, et cetera, is what helps make things better. But if you actually share some insight you have into an emotional predator with an emotional predator, it doesn't make them a better person. They use that information to hide what they're about even better. And they use that information to say, oh, now you've seen through me in that way? I better cover that up. It's because one of the things that we haven't talked about is that emotional predators, they operate, what I call it stealth. They must remain hidden. What they're really, they are masters at presenting a plausible, emotionally winning facade. You know, these are the charming, entertaining, sincere, I put that in quotes, you know, quote-unquote sincere people who are, they present this facade, this fake front. And so they operate by stealth and they're hidden. So if you have an insight into them and you share it with them, you say, gee, don't you see that when you're doing this, it causes pain to that person, you know, and you're upset by that? Well, they're going to use that information to hide better. They're not going to use that information to become better. They'll,
right.
And there's a difference between technique of manipulating and being a better person. So I'm not sure that answers your question, but
it does.
You know, Okay.
Yeah, no, it does. It does. It's just that, right. I mean, I have had many clients come to me after having gone through psychotherapy, traditional psychotherapy, and often they're worse because they are, they're guilted. They're guilted and shamed mm-hmm. because they're asked to take
yes.
responsibility for their feelings. And it... And they have no responsibility. They have been victimized. They have been victimized and targeted. So let's talk a little bit about, because I have several clients who are tangling with the court system who does not get this either. And when you're having parental alienation situations and those kind of things, the courts do not get it, and they often side with the predator. So
mm-hmm.
what is your experience with that?
My experience is that the really dangerous people are, some of them are quite brilliant. I mean, very seriously brilliant, and they're quite brilliant at, again, operating under a false but extremely convincing and winning facade, and it takes some real savvy and experience to get behind that. And there's a couple of things here. And judges often, you know, courtroom, things that happen in a courtroom, I've had good attorneys tell me, you know, it's sort of like it's all based on sort of soundbite appearances. There's not a lot of time in these hearings, even an all day long hearing, to deal with lots of things. It's about who can present the better image, really. Now, not always, and good-hearted judges, you know, do their damnedest under hard circumstances. But also the other people in the family court system, and I talk about this, there's some wonderful people working really hard, and a lot of them, they don't understand what they're dealing with. They don't get it, that these predator people are not like the rest of us. They don't think like the rest of us. They don't hold the same values. They don't believe the same things. They don't have the same attitudes, and they certainly don't behave the same way. And, you know, people get the well-intentioned professionals.
It's exasperating. Yeah, it's exasperating.
It's horrible.
It's horrible.
But this is why
I always tell my clients, you know, the most important thing you can do is find an attorney who is a shark, because they need to call this predator on everything that they're saying. They need to be able to see through it and not allow this to continue to go on. And it's so painful. I mean, and the children are the ones who are suffering. And speaking about children, I also like what you say, because this is very close to my philosophy. But you say that – my phone is getting weird. Okay. You say that children should not be sheltered from negative experience. To do so condescends to children and raises immature, naive adults, making us all less safe. It fails to respect children's intuition and wisdom about classmates and others who aren't safe. I think this is really at the root of all this, because if children are taught to trust their intuition and not what's being said to them, if really work on that, then they won't buy into this manipulation of a parent or later on in life, right? Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yes, I mean, you know, there's a, I don't know what you'd call it, but I've seen things in the elementary schools like you can't, they don't want people to be exclusionary, right? And I understand the thought behind that. But I've seen more than one situation where one of them, for example, this child got taken to task and scolded maybe even, I think there was some punishments involved from the school because he refused to play on the playground with another child. I'm not playing with that kid. And when I, you know, investigated what had happened and interviewed the people involved, it was quite clear that the child who was being punished for this was actually exercising extremely good judgment. The other child was a slick little bully in the making, and the school people were just, you know, they could not have been more blind. And this is something else that I talk about in the book. This happens, again, with children and people of all ages. One of the things that emotional predators are adept at doing is provoking other people, provoking emotional reactions in other people. In fact, they do it so that they can feel how powerful it is. Look at that. I got them chasing their tail, or I got them upset, or I got them whatever. To provoke an emotional response in someone else is a very, you know, powerful thing to do. And that's one of the central things that they do. They live by this. But I talk about in the book, and we may not have time to go into, the difference between covert aggression, aggression that is visible, and overt aggression. Aggression, excuse me, I said it backwards, a little dyslexia. Overt
covert
aggression
is invisible.
Covert,
right?
Is invisible. But overt aggression is obvious. You know, like he punched me. I don't ever, you know, oh, okay, we saw it. It was a punch. But manipulative people are masters at covert aggression. So they will provoke, and I go into some detail about this in the book, they know how to provoke other people. And there's ways that they do it, which we don't have time for right now. But
right.
And what happens often is they will provoke people in hidden ways until the person that they're targeting finally reacts. And the reaction, they allow themselves to be provoked. And so I talk about how essential it is to never take the bait. And what's involved in that, it can be complex, but never take the bait. But once the target takes the bait and they react, their reaction is almost always visible. And the true predator, the true problem, points to the reaction and says, oh, you see, so a person can be passive-aggressive with their spouse for a decade. And finally the spouse explodes and goes, God damn it, and they throw the plate across the room. And that's after 10 years of being relentlessly provoked in ways that no one will see, just withholding passive-aggression. And as soon as they do that, the true provoker points the finger and with big innocence says, you see what I have to put up with? And to get back to courtrooms, I've seen this happen over and over in the court. A narcissist like the situation I've just described will sit there in court and lie through their teeth, tell these blatant, outrageous lies about the other person. The other person has suffered from this abusive narcissist for a decade. And the judge looks out and they see one person, the narcissist, telling a sad story of how mistreated they've been by their true target. And they look, and the judge looks out and sees the target that these lies are being told about. And the target is getting more and more agitated because they're going, that's
right.
Outrageous. Those are outrageous lies.
Right.
And
right.
The judge looks at this and goes, well, let's see. The person claiming to be the victim, and that's something that narcissists do, these predators do. They claim to be the victim of the people they're victimizing. But they look out from the judge's point of view, they go, well, this one seems calm and sad. The other one seems agitated. And this is classic. So the calm and sad one, the narcissist, putting on a good act, that they must be the victim, and the judges get it completely wrong. Because they don't understand how these provocations work.
Exactly. Exactly. I tell my clients, I say, when you go to court, just sit there like nothing is bothering you. Just smile and don't get baited. Because what happens is these predators, if they try to bait you and you don't take it, they get agitated, mm-hmm. and then they begin to expose who they are. Have you had that happen?
Oh, yes, that's exactly, I go into that in some detail in the book. That's exactly right. I talk about exactly what you're saying. You do not take the bait. They will try to provoke you relentlessly. Do not take the bait. And by the way, the way to insulate yourself so that you don't take the bait is Well, it's step two of my five steps, and I lay out for protecting yourself. You have to know yourself. You have to know what your triggers are. And so they're going to poke it. They're going to, well, if you will, pull your triggers. You know what your emotional buttons are, and they're going to be, they're going to know that about you better than you do. So you have to reverse that. Know what buttons they could push, and then recognize when it's happening, and that helps you to be able to go, hey, I'm not, don't push that button. You can't push that button. I'm not gonna react. And I tell people about being provoked. I talk about three levels of not taking the bait. The first level is never, ever, ever show any emotional reaction when you're dealing with someone like this, when you're dealing with a difficult person. Don't show any emotional reaction. You know, just and that's in things you write or things you say, if you're in court, in any forum, whatever. The second level is also never make any decisions. Don't hit the send button on that email or the text you want to send back or any other decision. Never make any decisions when you're emotionally provoked. And the third level, which is the Holy Grail, it's sort of the Zen master level. Know yourself so well and adjust your inner sense of self to the point where they can push the buttons all they want, but it doesn't trigger any reaction, whatever. Don't even have the reaction. That's easier said than done, but it's enough just to never show any reaction.
Absolutely. So let's talk about, before we finish, I want to talk about how to identify these people.
Really important.
Let's talk about that. That's important.
So in the book, I lay out five steps for protecting yourself. And very quickly, the steps are, step number one is just what you said. You have to identify these people. If you don't identify these people, because they're hidden among us, and that's how they operate, they fly under your radar. The second step is you have to know yourself better than they know you. We just touched on that. The third step, related to number two, is you have to, once you identify yourself, you know, who am I? What are my triggers? You have to be able to be flexible about how you define yourself, and so that you can redefine yourself in ways that make you less vulnerable. That's the third step. The fourth and fifth steps run together. The fourth step is, whenever possible, I would say, run away and get away from these people. And when you can't get away because perhaps you work with them, or most commonly you have children with this person, if you can't get away, then step five is to learn how to respond strategically. Don't react emotionally. Don't react emotionally. Respond strategically. But to circle back, there's the strategies for and tactics for being strategic, a lot of them revolve around controlling information. Not, I said, if people know it, don't show it. But to circle back to your question, you know, how do we identify these people? Well, we touched on some of the things. By the way, there's a quote from Kafka about Franz Kafka. He said, evil knows about good, but good knows nothing of evil. And I think that's a fundamental problem. Good people don't want to know about evil for good reasons.
That's
it's
right.
Horrible, but this is about being realistic. So I think there's common traits, common attitudes, and then there's some common professions. And the common traits, I'll just quickly list them, are, among other things, these people are relentlessly managing their public image. They're very seductive in one way or another. It could be sexually and romantically seductive, or it could be financially seductive, or in some other way, you know, massaging.
Or educated or something like that, right, through education.
All of the above. I say to people, if someone you meet seems too good to be true, they probably are. I look for the rough edges in people I meet. I look for the stuff that rubs me a little wrong. Like, oh, okay, it's a nice balance. But people who, so they're relentlessly managing their public image. Here are some other traits that can be noted. They avoid giving direct answers to direct questions. They'll offer excuses, justifications, instead of changing. And by the way, these are sort of a checklist. When you're meeting someone, you can sort of, once you're familiar with these traits, you start to run them through your mind, going, wait a minute, I asked a direct question, but I didn't get a direct answer. Check that box. Anyway, they have a relentless need to control or have it their way. And if you start to notice that you're on a what I call a one-way street, get off. So classic expression is it's either my way or the highway, or you're either with me or you're against me. These are clear warning signs of a dangerous person if they behave that way. The other thing is they provoke others into emotional reactions. They claim to be the victim, often of the person they're targeting. They can fake sincerity, and the key word is this, fake sincerity, and make big emotional displays for the purpose of charming or intimidating or seducing. They will also pretend to be ignorant, and they'll pretend to be innocent. I didn't do that. Or what? What? I'm doing what? I didn't understand. This is something to watch out for. The other thing I think is very useful to key into, to tune into, is they will trap other people in what I call no-win binds. A no-win bind is you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. And sometimes it takes a little stepping back and going, wait a minute, if I do what they're asking me for, then they're going to accuse you of doing, you lose either way. And
right.
That's a classic. The other thing that they do that's pretty well understood these days, I think, is they will isolate and gaslight their targets. They cut you off from your friends, your family. And if you start to notice this habit, this is very important to not allow that to happen. A few other traits that these people do, they will create havoc, confusion, and chaos out of simple things. You find yourself spinning around, chasing your tail, going, this is worth about 3 minutes of a normal person's time, and we're into the third hour of confusion over nothing. Could be that they're just confused people, but this is a tactic that they use. They will also disrupt your natural rhythms. For example, by waking you in the middle of the night to demand you talk to them or demand something from you, or you keep late hours and sleep in the morning, but they're going to insist on waking you up at 5 in the morning for whatever they need done. So that's something that people often don't key into. Two other things, traits. They're hypocrites. They ignore the rules when it serves them, and they expect other people to follow the rules when that serves them.
Yes.
And the other thing about being hypocrites is they will say and do anything to get what they want if they think they can get away with it. And then later, they'll completely reverse themselves. And by the way, if you point that out to them, this is part of, I say to people, know it, don't show it. When you observe these things in another person, resist the temptation to show, hey, I noticed these things about you. Know
right.
it for yourself. Don't show it to them. Because if you point out, hey, you just insisted that we had to do X, and now you're insisting that we can never do X. Which is it? It can't be both. If you point that out to them, they'll do a number of things. They'll attack you. They'll pretend to be innocent. They'll pretend to be ignorant. They'll change the subject to something completely different. But often they'll just get hostile toward you. Anyway, the other thing
yes.
is sometimes in these people, they can tend to be know-it-alls. So I know we're going to be short on time. Those are some common traits, some common attitudes that you find, and there are just a few here. Arrogance, entitled, self-righteous, condescending. Now, that can appear at first as they're so self-confident, but there's a difference. They can be impatient, intolerant, irritable, and that's particularly when they don't get their way. They can behave like a spoiled toddler, a 2-year-old, 3-year-old. They can behave that way when they don't get what they want. They can be angry and dismissive and imperious, or they can play you for sympathy by displaying meekness and humility and playing like they're bewildered or they're the martyr. And either of those extremes, being playing for sympathy or being angry, these are both ways of trying to control other people. And the last thing about identifying them is, again, we've talked about this, they tend to be drawn to certain professions. Not everyone in these professions are difficult people. There are many wonderful people in these professions, but any profession that provides access to emotionally vulnerable people who are powerless relative to the person in the profession, and it provides a cover of, you know, respected authority. These are professions that emotional predators are drawn to. So we talk about legal profession, education, spiritual leaders. It used to be more the case, I think, in medicine when we used to have a paradigm of the doctor as God. That's broken down a little bit recently. Corporate management, mental health, and of course, let's not forget, politics. Again,
politics, oh yes.
Everyone in these professions are not, there are many wonderful people in these professions, but I think there's a higher percentage of problem people in these kinds of professions because they provide an opportunity to wield power and dominate other people.
Those are the types of things
I look for.
Right. And there's one more thing I wanted to say is they will tell you who you are, who they are, because they're just that cocky. They will tell you who they are, and you will just laugh at it. You'll blow right by it. So pay attention to what they say. They're not kidding.
Oh.
They're telling you who they are. Right?
I think that's absolutely true. It's remarkable how they can do that. You know, there's one other that reminds me of a related but different thought, which is sometimes you have to look. You have to go know yourself. You've had an adult life. You've never really been known. You've never known yourself to be an angry person, or nobody's ever described you as angry in the past. But since you've been involved with this new person, you notice, you know, they're accusing you of being angry, and you have to ask yourself, is that me, or is this something that is being provoked and actually transferred from them onto me? But sometimes in these situations also, a manipulative person will make all kinds of accusations about their target, and the target, being a good-hearted person, will of course take it seriously, like, oh my God, maybe I am being selfish, go to the Chinese restaurant and not the Italian restaurant tonight after we've gone to his choice of restaurants 30 times in a row. Maybe I am being selfish. But sometimes if you look at the accusations that a manipulative person makes about their target, they can be seen as projections, as statements about themselves. Some of these predator people are highly unconscious about that kind of thing, and they will accuse you of all manner of stuff that's really, you can turn it around. I learned this in kindergarten, actually, a playground expression that says it's about projection and protecting yourself from it. It goes like this: I know you are, but what am I? I'm rubber. I'm rubber, and you're glue. Everything you say bounces off me and sticks to you. So when you're with somebody who's accusing you of being all kinds of things. Oh, you're not paying enough attention to them. You're being selfish. It goes on and on. The litany just goes on and on. It's useful to sometimes, you know, first of all, you've got to get out of gaslighting. You've got to check with independent people, people who've known you before you got involved with this difficult person. And it's useful to recite that. You know, wait a minute. Maybe they're talking about themselves. That's not me. Yeah.
You know, I saw a quote the other day that I really liked, and I actually put it up here on my computer. But it said, don't defend yourself. Say, your attempt to portray me in a negative light is noted. I like that, you know. If you have to say something, just that. I thought, isn't that great?
Yes.
I mean, talk about pissing them off. Anyway, we're coming down to the last minutes, and I want to make sure that that we tell everybody about your book and where it can be got. You know, so your book is Protecting Yourself from Emotional Predators, Neutralize the Users, Abusers, and Manipulators Hidden Among Us, and you are Stephen J. Wollhandler, Wollhandler. Stephen, where is your book available?
Well, certainly on Amazon, it's an ebook and a paperback. I recommend, a lot of people like ebooks. I like paperbacks because you can take your pencil and make notes in the margin and use it as a reference book, because it's designed to be comprehensive. It has a ton of very, very practical things, as well as, you know, just the big picture, that a new understanding of the big picture of what we're dealing with here. And so it's available on Amazon. You can just type in Protecting Yourself from Emotional Predators. It'll come up. It's also available. I'm in Colorado, and there's a wonderful local bookstore in Denver called The Tattered Cover. And they have a website. You could get it off of their website, too. Or if you happen to be in the Denver metro area, that's just a wonderful local bookstore. It can be had there.
Okay. And you have a website, I assume?
Yeah, there's a website. It's emotionalpredators.com.
Okay.
And it's kind of work in progress. It should be cleaned up. We're cleaning it up right now, trying to make it a little more user friendly. And
okay.
But so it's up and running.
And that's the best way. Is that the best way to contact you, or would you like to give an email?
You can contact, yeah, absolutely. If you go to emotionalpredators.com, there's plenty of ways to contact me there. There's a contact. There's my phone number is right there. You can email me through the website.
Okay.
That's a good way to get to me. Sure, and I'm happy to talk to people about, you know, problem people in their lives. Because every one of these situations is a little bit different. There's all these commonalities, but each situation, there's no limit to the variety of these kind of people.
Oh, no. Yes. So anyway, well, thank you for the work that you do. I am so I feel like I have a brother in this.
Uh-huh.
It's just nice, you know, to know that there are people out there like you who absolutely get this and trying to help other people understand it, avoid it, heal from it. So thank you so much. This has been great. You know, I was really looking forward to talking to you because I knew we'd have a lot to talk about. But we did. We covered a lot of territory in an hour. So I appreciate your time and the work that you do. And thank you for being my guest today. It's been wonderful.
Randy, thank you so much. I hope that, you know, little by little we can help individual people and help the culture itself to wise up to this. This is the fundamental problem of our age, I believe.
And, I do, too.
It needs to be addressed immediately.
It's at the root of alcoholism and drug abuse and it everything, society all comes back to this, to the abuse from these people. So, I have to close the show, and that could be a whole other discussion.
It's been wonderful. I'm sorry we haven't had more time. There's much, much more. And I think your book and my book are resources that people should, and there are other resources in my book. I give the footnotes. I cite a few other books that are really valuable.
Right.
So I think people should get these books and use them as resources. Really,
right. Learn and then pass them on or tell other people to buy them because, you know, we need to educate the public. And it's all over the world. It is in the most remote places that you would imagine. So anyway, but I have to go. So thank you, Stephen. Enjoy your day. Yeah. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Randy. Okay.
Bye-bye. We are out of time, but if you have any comments or questions about today's show, you can email me at loveyourlife@randyfine.com. loveyourlife@randyfine.com. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.